Welcome to Madlit Musings, the podcast where we dive into the minds of authors, exploring the profound realms of faith, social issues, and the delightful world of entertainment. I'm your host, Jamie Jill Wright, and on this literary journey, you never quite know what you're going to get. A big shout out and thank you to this episode's sponsor, Tyndale Publishing. Their commitment to delivering faith-inspired narratives aligns seamlessly with our goal here at Madlit Musings to explore the deeper questions of faith and social issues through the power of storytelling. Hello, everyone. It is Jamie Jill Wright here at Madlit Musings, and I'm pleased to welcome Stephen James back. Hi, Stephen.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me, Jamie.
Yeah, it's great to have you back and chat about your latest upcoming release, Fatal Domain, and continue the adventure.
Yeah, no kidding. It's been interesting because like I wrote this book called Broker of Lies, came out last year.
Right.
And it introduced kind of this whole new cast of characters that I'd never written of before. And so this is the continuing adventure. So as you know, once you kind of create a bunch of characters or get to know them, it's fun to sort of see what shenanigans and adventures they get into in the next sort of edition. And so
exactly,
you're fun to watch that happen.
Yeah, it is. And I suppose the characters just keep building and increasing in depth and dimension as you go too, as you get to know them.
Yeah, you know, one of the characters, this guy named Gunnar Bain, is a former military guy. He's really tough as nails, but he's also trying to write a romance novel, and he's like really bad, but he thinks he's good. Like he's trying to sell this romance novel. So like in one of the cases, he writes, Donovan reached out and touched Andrea's arm and stroked her skin, the largest and most visible organ on her body. Was, oh my gosh, what is this?
Oh no.
So it's really fun. It's been a ton of fun to sort of let loose and let him write some romance.
Yeah.
See where that goes.
That's great. You know, it's funny to watch those characters, and then yeah, those types of moments where they even kind of like surprise you and you're like, oh, that was good. But those are the characters that readers remember.
I mean, he's colorful. At first when I was writing him, he was just kind of this tough guy or whatever. I'm like, okay, but he wasn't super interesting to me. So then when I sort of added this other which almost seems like an incongruency with him or whatever, it suddenly became this character that was super fun to be with. So I'm actually kind of a fan of having multidimensional characters instead of just like one sort of cardboard or cookie cutter character.
Right, right.
And so trying to find ways to combine traits that we wouldn't expect in the same character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that does make them more memorable and enjoyable, fun to be around.
Yeah. I was talking to Julie Clausen. She writes Regency, and she's got a character in one of her books right now who's an older gentleman who had a parrot who died, and he had the parrot stuffed. And now he takes this parrot with him everywhere and talks to him. And I told her, I said, I'm sorry, your books are great, but that's the only character I can ever remember is this older man who talks to his dead stuffed parrot. Like, you know,
these are
the things of great fiction, I guess, but. Yeah, you know, I found if you go into for good characters, this is what I love to do. And I love to do it anyway. But I love to go into senior living and assisted care facilities, partially because I grew up going to them, visiting relatives. And I just love spending time with those people because they have so much to offer. But you get the best personalities and stories from those people that can create really fun characters.
That's interesting. Yeah, my mom just moved into a place. It's more an apartment near an assisted living place. But anyway, so she downsized from our home that I grew up in as a kid, actually many years ago now. So it was interesting just kind of meeting some of the characters that were there.
Yeah,
as she moved in,
there was one when my grandma. And not to get off on this, but characters are just fun, right? And this older gentleman lived at the nursing home where my grandma lived. And he was that dichotomy of like, you wouldn't expect it, right? He was a Navy cook, and he'd been a cook on a ship during the war. And he was all tatted up. Everywhere you could look, there was a tattoo. But he would sit all day long with those pages that have like the black velvet. And then you can color inside the black velvet, like you had tigers and roses and unicorns.
Oh, yeah.
And he would sit there with his markers and just color these all day long and tell me stories about the war. And he'd intersperse it with very colorful language. And then he'd be coloring a unicorn. And you're like, what? This is great. I loved it.
Yeah, that's fun.
Super fun.
When I look at characters, it's sort of weird. Like, I don't necessarily think of myself as creating characters. It's almost like getting to know them. So it's almost like they exist out there, and I'm not coming up with them. It's just that the more time I spend writing them, sort of brushing off the, I guess, a layer of sand or whatever, and you see, okay, so that's what this character is really like. And a lot of, it's a little different than maybe some authors who are like, yeah, I'm in charge, I create the characters and all that. I get that. But I don't really feel that way. I feel like if I try to get them to do something, act some way, say something, that it sometimes is disingenuous, that it's just like I have to let them act honestly. So sometimes I'll like give an example of like, let's say you have a leash around your dog's neck or something, you lead it where to go, right? And so a lot of people do that with their characters. They like put a leash around their characters, like lead it over here for the plot or whatever. I actually look at it differently. I actually try to snip the leash, cut the leash, and let the character act without restraint. And when I find that when I let the character act without restraint, where I'm not trying to tell them where to go, what to do, and stuff like that, that they start to emerge, that's when I really start to get to know them.
I like that. I
Yeah.
like that. And it's true because I don't know if people understand the writer's brain. I keep trying to explain it to my husband. Like I'm actually sane, but there are people in my head that have their own personalities and just come out on the page and they just do whatever they want to do. And you can't always control it.
I mean, some people, do try to, or their perspective is that, they're, like I say, they're the god of the book or whatever, and they can direct people to go and do. But I find that, for me personally, it's more of an act of discovery than it is of creating something from nothing.
No, that's totally fair.
Yeah.
So when you look at Fatal Domain, then how, do you have favorite characters or how did you, I don't even want to say how did you, like tell us a little bit about the story
No, I
and the
mean,
characters.
yeah. The main character Travis Brock is actually he's introduced obviously in Broker of Lies, but he's a redactor, so he works for the Department of Defense, basically in the basement of the Pentagon, and he has almost a photographic memory. So his job is to review all the top secret programs and files that we have, and when a Freedom of Information Act request comes in, he's the man who decides what can and cannot be released to the public. And so he basically knows all our secrets, more than the president even. And so in Broker of Lies, well, let's say a foreign power finds out about him and sends some people to try and capture him, and he ends up on the run and has to stop a terrorist attack while he's on the run. So he's back in this book, and I would say he's out of the basement of the Pentagon and he's kind of in the field. So it's not really in, he's not really a field operative necessarily. He's not trained as a spy or something like that. But in this book, it's kind of like the role that he's starting to emerge into. And so yeah, when I write a story, I always like questions that I don't actually know the answers to, and sort of moral dilemmas. And so in Fatal Domain, this isn't giving too much away, I don't think, but there's a team of people who believe that the best thing they can do is to steal these secrets from a pharmaceutical firm and make them available to everyone around the world for free, basically to help the poor around the world, because only the really rich could afford this new drug treatment. And so their idea is, okay, we're just going to steal all the secrets, post them online, and people all over the world can benefit from this and have better lives. And so our heroes have to stop them. So that's the interesting thing, is because you're like, well, wait, isn't that a good thing? Well, no, you can't steal from You can't steal from pharmaceutical firms, even if you think you have a good reason for it. And so it ends up being this thing where one of the characters is like, are we sure we're the right, are we sure we're the good guys? You know, here in this story. And so it's super interesting. And then there's a character, well, a few characters from Broker of Lies who return, and one that's kind of a huge surprise that if readers have read Broker of Lies, they'll recognize who I'm talking about. But this character appears at the end of that book on the last page. And so this character is back in Fatal Domain and is not a very good person, we'll say. So yeah, I think we've chatted before, and I write organic, so I don't plot or outline anything as I write. I'm always trying to see and discover where the story goes. And so with this story, with Fatal Domain, I really had these dilemmas and moral quandaries and so on in mind. And I was just like, I don't know what's going to happen. Let's find out. Stick the characters in there. Let them act without
Let him
restraint.
go.
I'll have to say there were some surprises that I did not see coming in this story.
And then you got to figure out your way out of those surprises.
I love it when I'm writing and suddenly I'm like, oh, what if, whatever it might be, what if someone was the bad guy? Or what if, and you're like, no, that could never work. And you're like, well, what if it could work
What if it
though?
could?
Yeah, and then you go back and maybe you foreshadow or tweak things a little bit in one direction or the other and make it happen. So that's, to me, it's fun and it's part of the game. Like when we read a book, we don't want to be able to guess how everything's going to go. Like in certain types of books, we know maybe there will be a happy ending or the couple will get together or the love story or whatever, but we don't want to figure out how. We want that to be a surprise. Because if we figure everything out, we'll get to the end. We're like, come on, man. I knew that was going to happen, and that's what happened. So it's this interesting thing where we want to predict how a story will go, but we want to be wrong, but still satisfied. Like we don't want to get everything right. And so as I'm writing, I'm always asking, what would the reader be thinking about, asking, questioning, wondering about, worrying about in this moment? And then my goal is to try to give them what they want or something better. It's the way I look. So, like, if they're expecting suspense, okay, give them suspense. Or if I can, try to give them something even better.
And that's so true, because you're absolutely right. Now that you're saying, like, they want to be able to predict, but they also want to be like, I want to figure it out, but I don't want to figure it out, because then I'll be irritated that I figured it out. So
So we want the characters to be like one step ahead of us
yeah.
in a certain sense, and the author. And so it's a game. And so when I write, I try to really enter like a reader's mind and think, based on their experience so far in the story, kind of what's going through their mind. And then you try to really take reader expectations into account as I try to figure out each scene, each next step in the story.
Do you ever find yourself like three quarters of the way through going, how do I make sense of this? Like,
Absolutely.
how am I
Always.
gonna
Every
wrap
book. I love it. Yeah. No, absolutely. I feel like that's essential. Never started a book where I knew how it would end. So for me, writing is really a process of, like I said, uncovering or discovering. So yeah, no, literally, I will get to the middle and I'll be thinking about what if it, went in this direction or that direction. And I try to make them not, the stories not too predictable. Like really a big fan of twists and turns and so my books have that. Fatal Domain has a number of those. And so I think once you get characters that are fascinating, give them dilemmas that are intriguing, set them on a, and a surprising route through the story, I mean that's kind of what readers are looking for.
And it's definitely, I mean, you've mentioned it in the past too, but story is more than just a beginning, middle, and end. It really
Oh
is.
yeah, and it's like over the last few years, I've really been thinking a lot about story and sort of what the elements of a great story are. And a lot of people will say, a story has a beginning, middle, and end, or first act, second act, third act, or whatever. And I get where people are coming from, but the idea that a story is simply a temporal progression of events, I don't think is good, because it gives people the idea, the impression that stories are a list of occurrences. rather than a collision of desires. There's a huge
Ooh.
difference. Yeah. So, like, a story is just not just a progression of events, it's a collision of desires. And
Yes.
so, when all we do is look at a story as far as like this happened, then this happened, then that's a report, but it's not a story. So I really have become sort of passionate about trying to teach people what are the elements of a great story, regardless of the order you tell them in, or to look at the aspects of story, not just the progression
Yeah.
events within it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and I was talking with a group of writers the other day, and we were talking about how we start brainstorming kind of, what's the next book about? What's our next story about? And they were asking me, how do you come up with, do you do a chapter by chapter synopsis, or do a write an outline? And I'm just kind of like, I don't know. I said, I feel like that's just too restrictive. And I said, I like to look at a theme, and I picture like a theme is kind of like, my husband and I shoot archery, and so you have your bullseye, right? And then you've got all these rings that go out from it. And I picture like my theme or that central idea being the bullseye. And then you can hit anywhere around that target that you want to, as long as you can get it back to that bullseye by the end of the story.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, Flannery O'Connor, I may get a word or two wrong of this quote, but she said, when you can state the theme of a story, when you can separate it from the story itself, then you can be sure the story is not a very good one. Story is a way to say something that cannot be said any other way, and it takes every word of the story to say what the meaning is. And
Ooh.
I actually really believe in that. So
Yeah.
I don't have anything wrong with someone's like, oh, I'm, dealing with this idea of forgiveness or whatever. But instead of starting with a theme, I always start with a dilemma and try to get into this idea of conflict,
Okay.
tension, and instead of like a message that, I'm trying to get
Sure.
across. So I like your idea of like, you're shooting, but hopefully it's not, I guess, too predictable, and people read it and they're like, oh, I get it. I'm supposed to
Right.
whatever the
Right.
message might be. But instead, when you say, read my book, and they read it, you're like, what's the theme? And they're like, huh, I don't know exactly how to phrase it, but it's super impactful. That's what I like. Like, if you would want to know what the theme is, you'd have to read the whole.
I like that. Yeah.
Or, like, for instance, at conferences, sometimes I'll take the story of the prodigal son from the Bible that Jesus told the story. And I'm like, well, what's the theme of the prodigal son? Someone might say something like, well, loving your brother or something. Okay. Let's say love. Are there any other themes to the prodigal? Someone else will say, like, well, free will or repentance or something. Okay. Well, is there anything else? Well, they might say jealousy from one brother to the other. And then I say, is there anything more? Well, maybe, God's sovereignty or whatever. People just list all these things
Right.
until finally you have this giant list of 30 different quote themes from this one little story. And you're just like, the only way to know what the prodigal son story is about is to read the prodigal son story.
Right.
So the more that you focus on one little quote theme, the more you don't expand the meaning of the story, you actually shrink it. So, like, if you told it and you're like, yeah, this is a story about jealousy. Someone else reads it and they're like, I actually thought more it had to do with love and forgiveness and repentance and all these other things, but I guess it's just jealousy. So I believe that the more narrowly we can define the theme, the more we shrink the story.
That's a really neat perspective. I like
Yeah.
that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna
And
chew on
so,
that.
yeah. So it's like, I don't want it to be like a super narrow thing. I want it to be multidimensional as people read it. They get this impression, different perspectives on this maybe one idea, whatever. So, Fatal
Yeah.
Domain, one of the questions it deals with is this idea of forgiveness.
Okay.
I wouldn't say it's a theme so much as it is questions relating to forgiveness becoming vital to the story. And this character, Travis Brock, has to decide, when does someone deserve forgiveness? What if they've done the unforgivable? What does it mean to forgive them? Does it mean to give them another chance to hurt you? Or is that different from forgiveness? So interesting questions, I feel like,
Yeah.
that don't have super easy answers.
Right.
Like you said to someone, do you forgive them? They're like, yeah. Well, does that mean that you have to go be friends with them again? Or where does forgiveness differ from reconciliation? Are they the same thing? They different? That's interesting to me. So I like to ask some of those questions in the story.
Well, it's great to ask those questions and the different nuances of it too, because I think a lot of times, especially within the Christian genre, so to speak, we like to have clear black and white pat answers to things, or here's the scripture verse that you go to answer that deep dilemma. And I think all of us would recognize that, especially like a theme of like forgiveness, for example, is not cookie cutter. You can't answer that in just a very simple definition.
Hope not. I mean, if you can answer it with a, like, if you can answer to me, the way I look at it, like, if you have a message, then literally write nonfiction. That's what nonfiction's for. If you're like, you should be friendly to people, just tweet it out. Like, why spend a year of your life, 10 hours a day writing a book if you just have sort of a message that you can just like put on a bumper sticker? So I really try to kind of. My stories tend to be pretty complex. Try to look at issues from lots of different perspectives instead of starting with a message or an agenda,
Right.
sort of a question or dilemma, and then let people chew on it. And I don't always end my stories with like a simple answer to everything. I would rather that readers kind of come to their own conclusion. So, like in this book, there are In Fatal Domain, there's a couple of characters who come to sort of different conclusions about forgiveness, what it means, and when it should or shouldn't be extended to people, and how that looks. So let readers, chew on that and see what they think, and maybe they'll come up to a different, answer as well.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot. So Fatal Domain comes out April 2024, and it is book two in a series or trilogy, or where are we at with this?
Yeah, it's just the second book, and so Broker of Lies is out, so people can pre-order Fatal Domain, but they can also check out Broker of Lies and see if then can hopefully continue the story with the second book. But if you like spy stories, domestic espionage, kind of like high concept thrillers, that's really what these kind of books they are,
No, and I thoroughly enjoyed Broker of Lies, and I'm looking forward to reading Fatal Domain myself and continue the
Absolutely.
story and the adventure. So,
Well, it sounds great. Yeah. So, I wish you the best, Jamie, and thanks so much for being on.
I appreciate having you on too. Thank you for joining Mad Lit Musings, where every conversation is a journey and every book is a new adventure. Subscribe now on your favorite podcast player or check us out on YouTube, and let's explore the fascinating intersection of faith, society, and storytelling together.